Welcome to our final episode of the 2021-22 VMI Leader Journey podcast for Season 2. I'm Major Catherine Roy, your host for this episode titled Making a Lasting Impact. With me are VMI Class of 2022 and newly commissioned Army officers Seth McRoberts and Ryan Cooper. McRoberts was a platoon leader for Charlie Company, an English major, a member of the Triathlon Club, and Cadet in Charge, or CIC, for the Center's Cadet Superintendent's Advisory Board, or CSAB, a diverse group of cadets who volunteer their time to make recommendations on improvements to processes or policies affecting cadet life. Cooper is an economics and business major, former captain of the NCAA swim and dive team, and served with McRoberts as the Assistant Cadet in Charge, or ACIC, for CSAB. Both served as leadership conference table group facilitators. This volunteer role, an important factor in the success of our annual leadership conference, requires pre-conference training that includes research on reading assignments on the conference theme and topics, and attending training sessions. Cadets who work as facilitators are responsible for leading the table group discussions. They learn how to handle a variety of communication styles, exercise critical thinking to challenge some of the feedback, and encourage everyone's participation for a more valuable conference guest experience. During today's conversation, you will hear about the projects they worked on and how they use their time to make a lasting impact now and in the future. We hope you enjoy this episode. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and help us by sharing this episode. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to leave us a note in the comments. Now, let's listen in. What was the most surprising thing that you experienced or learned as a result of being here?
I actually told this story at the Cadet Club donor dinner the other night, and it was the first time I've told it in a while, and as I'm about to graduate, it's been kind of cool reflecting on it. But I came up to VMI on an official visit for swimming, an NCAA visit, and back at the time, I kind of viewed that experience as like, you know, that's just going to be my practice for my other official visits. I'm just going to go up there and see what it's like to
rehearsal.
Like a little rehearsal for official visits. You know, I had considered coming here, but it wasn't a very serious thought, honestly. When I got here, I wouldn't say immediately, but probably within 12 to 24 hours of being here, my whole mindset of the experience and the opportunity pretty much changed. I saw, you know, as an 18-year-old, you know, kind of crazy to think about this, but I kind of saw how cadets were spending their time, the relationships they had with one another, the time they'd spent investing in those relationships, and how, you know, that was something genuine that you can't really find in a whole lot of places. And I remember driving away from VMI that weekend just being shocked at, you know, the level of maturity, you know, the level of dedication to each other and to themselves that the cadets had for their future. And at that point, there was no other place I wanted to go to school.
So when you came for your visit, did you do one of those weekend things, or how long
I stayed,
your visit? I'm just wondering how you observed all that in your visit.
So mine was actually not at an open house, which I felt to be probably helpful. I'm not going to say I wouldn't have come here if I'd come to an open house. I think that's a bit of a stretch. But I was in a room with an upperclassman. He was a second classman at the time, so he was on the back end of his cadetship. He was quite immersed in his academic curriculum at that point in time. He had some well-established friends, a well-established support system. And I think walking around with him and experiencing life down the road, as opposed to it being, you know, either rat year or fourth class year, you know, that was a big difference in me seeing VMI really at face value, if you want to call it that. You know, I was there during the rat line, so I got to see pretty much all that was going on there. But being able to look further than fourth stoop during the visit really allowed me to see the potential that the school had.
Were you paired with somebody in your same major, or it didn't matter?
No, he was not my same major. He was a different major, but he was a member of the swim team. Oh, so okay. He was one of my future teammates.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Cadet McRoberts, how about you?
Yes, ma'am. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, a little bit similar to that idea of relationship, but I'll get into the surprising factor later. When it comes to sort of my journey to VMI, there was always a guarantee that I was going to be going to a military college because I wouldn't have it any other way. Knew the maturity of said military college, has been around for it my entire life. We come from a very military family.
You have family members who serve?
Several family members, one of which is graduated in 2015, so I think that was the biggest eye-opener.
Older sibling?
No, he was one of my older cousins. And the first eye-opener was when I was, I think, in the sixth grade, came here when he was a rat. And then in the ninth grade, when he graduated in 2015, I came here for his graduation, kind of saw his entire journey throughout VMI. I remember bringing him to the house before his graduation. You know, very much reserved at the time, but I remember my mom asking him a question about his ring, and he lit up when he, you know, just like any VMI cadet, when you ask about their ring. And I definitely found out, hey, you know, this is a really special place. And even when I talked to several West Point cadets, when I talked to Naval Academy cadets, as well as Air Force Academy, there wasn't that spark that VMI has.
And really? It was kind of surprising.
And it was very surprising. You know, it was very interesting. The idea of the BR spirit was something that was just incredibly profound to me. And it was something that you see on the way to seeing folks that, you know, serve in combat together, that there's this unbreakable bond, you know, not quite to that level, but I think we're very much on that path in the right direction, that we definitely do anything for each other. And that was a very special thing when it comes to relationship that Ryan was talking about, that it attracts pretty much the ones that want to stay here, is probably why they stay, is because that idea that your BRs are going to be there with you, your fellow cadets are going to be there with you, you're going to take care of you, and that at the end of the day, VMI is a family.
Would you say that the Corps has an understanding of its mission, if you will, either by class or as a whole body, as the Corps of Cadets? That's what I was going to say earlier, is that it's having, if you, in your communications, if you can focus on the mission, you know, we're here to graduate, or we're here to get through whatever the next hurdle or benchmark experience is, hey, we can do it together. I think that does help bind people together. You can rally around a mission, if not each other.
I'll be pretty transparent in this answer here. I think that it's a pretty obvious thing to state that, you know, the bonds you have with the people who you meet here are strongest when you're a rat. Right. And
yeah, there's no fellowship like the fellowship of suffering.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you go through a lot together with that group, and so it's understanding that would be the time where you all are strongest as a group. But I will say, and maybe this is just from my personal experience, I'll let Seth attest to this as well, is that I feel like the number of people who you stay in touch with throughout the course of your cadetship is a real gift, a real blessing. I know plenty of friends from high school who, you know, knew people their first year through classes, through orientation, through a fraternity, sorority, something of that nature, and they just kind of evolved through their friendships, which is natural, right? And I think the nature of VMI is different. But I've been really lucky to be in contact with a lot of people still who I was either close with freshman year or at least had experiences with freshman year. And you know, as I come to graduate, I don't really see those relationships going anywhere, if that makes sense. And that's hard to come by. I mean, I look at my parents still hang out with a few friends from college. You know, they still make a point of seeing them on a fairly regular basis. And as I look to my alumni years, I'm fairly confident that I'll have either as strong or stronger of a bond long term with the people who I've met here.
So one of the leadership values perhaps might be loyalty, right? As you build those bonds, as you build that trust, Would you say that loyalty has something to do with it, or maybe something else?
Well, it's one of those things that's not a lot of people realize it when they're going through it, right? But you see it through how they interact with one another. And you see it when they come back for alumni reunions. You know, I know plenty of alumni from the 70s, 80s, as well as a few recent alumni. And the way they speak about how their relationships have evolved since they've been here speaks volumes to the kind of relationships and friendships that this place builds. So loyalty, I mean, when you're going through it, yes, a little bit, but stronger as you get older, most definitely.
I think definitely in our today's society, there's a very throwaway culture type deal. And when it comes to relationships, that's a big one. And cultivating a very meaningful relationship that we see here at VMI is definitely one that's definitely centered on loyalty, and you have to have loyalty because, you know your BRs, and they're going to do really dumb stuff, some dumber than others, throughout your cadetship. But having that loyalty to them and having that perseverance to stick with them and say, hey, you may have made a bad decision here, but now, you know, we're going to pick each other up. That is definitely the essence of loyalty there.
Those will be the stories you share at the reunions, too, over a beer, you know?
Exactly. There's this stigma, though, in our culture of, like, you know, if I were to ask Seth, if I were to be like, oh, do you know so-and-so? I feel like the answer these days would be like, oh, yeah, I know them. I follow them on Instagram, right? Or we connect on LinkedIn. I know them through, you know, name the social media, meet them. Like, you fill in the blank, right? And, you know, VMI gets away from that in a really good way.
Tested. I think The environment tests you, and you really don't know. You don't know what you're in for until you go through hardships, I don't think.
Yeah. I mean,
and joys too. I mean, who stands with you? Who is cheering you when you're doing well and is not jealous or envious, right?
I mean, I think in an ultra competitive college environment, those things are going to be present at least a little bit. I think that some competition's healthy for friendships, but I think at the end of the day, yeah, the people who you know here have got your back.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. If it's a healthy kind of competition where you're saying you can do it and, hey, I did this, oh, now I'm inspired. If you can do it, I can do it kind of thing. I think that is healthy.
I mean, I'll step back and I'll admit this. Like, there are plenty of people here who I've met on this journey, and I envy what they've been able to accomplish. But in the same way, you know, I'm inspired by what they've done, and I just
Absolutely.
want it for myself, right? I don't want it because they have it. I'm not jealous because they've achieved what they've achieved, but I look up to them, you know, peer to peer, and I'm like, you know, if you could do that, I want to be able to do that too. And so it kind of breeds that those good competitive relationships.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Since the both of you have said that you are members of CSAB, have you been facilitators at either of our at any leadership conference while you were here?
Yeah, so I know I've started out as a facilitator back last year, I would say, in 2021 in our spring conference when we held it online. Colonel Gray did a very good job there, kind of mitigating and adapting to that. So I started out as a facilitator online, which took a lot more coordination with understanding how to mute and how to perform on Zoom and how to lead a group on Zoom. So that was a little bit more of an interesting factor, but we did a good job nevertheless. And then moving into this year, 2021, in the fall, did the leadership conference here, and that was run very well. I know it was a lot more enjoyable with people in person.
I had a lot of the same experiences that Seth did. I think one of the biggest takeaways, both going from doing it online to doing it in person, was just being able to interact with more of a variety of people than what we experience here at VMI. You know, here at VMI, it's a lot of just the same types of people pursuing the same types of things, but when you bring in people from other schools who have a more of a variety of interests, even older professionals, right? I think that was a really good lesson for me, and being able to lead and facilitate people who knew more than I did, and being able to take a step back, even in a leadership role, and learn from those people.
Let's talk about that a little bit. I guess Colonel Gray calls that having groupthink. And when he designs the leadership conference, he tries to challenge people's notions and break that up. So that's one of the reasons why when we do our in-person events, we mix the tables up. So no more than two cadets at a table. We don't know the ages of people who are coming, but we try to put then the public or other school attendees at everybody's table. Online, I guess we didn't have that experience so much.
I mean, from my recollection, we actually had more people. Like the groups were almost equally or more split up online as they were in person. I think both conferences did a really good job of highlighting, you know, diversity of interests, diversity of age. So I did not really see a discrepancy between the two.
And what would you say is the biggest difference in, say, your barracks experiences or the CSAB experiences? Because you're the ACIC for CSAB, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
And so what's the difference, the biggest difference that you've noticed in leading that group versus maybe a table group discussion at our leadership conference, other than maybe not knowing the other participants?
True. Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say, you know, based on my experience as a captain here at VMI, I think, you know, the biggest thing there is, you know, being more of an assertive leader, right? Like guiding something by your knowledge, by people knowing who you are, right? You know, with CSAB, and Seth can attest to this as well, and up on the Hill, people know who you are and they know what to expect from you. And I think that kind of brings a different dynamic to the kind of leader who you are. Whereas on a table discussion where most of the people who were there are strangers, I mean, I remember, you know, my table at this past conference, I had cadets at the table who I didn't know, right? So having to realize that and lead people based on them not knowing who you are, and both having to consider, you know, how you lead and who you're leading, right? Just the kind of thinking through that is a completely different process, but one that I think we're very confident and able to navigate here at VMI.
Mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, kind of to add on to that, what Ryan was saying is that when we talk about the table discussions, you have to have it's a very short time for you to really set the stage of what type of leader that you are and whether those folks should be listening to you at that table. And it's kind of it frankly is a good introduction to what you will be doing as a brand new leader, wherever, in the civilian world or in the Army. You have to set that stage really quickly to understand, hey, I'm somebody to be listened to and I should be leading this group. Just in the same way that at VMI, there is a hierarchy of, you know, the structural hierarchy, but in the same way we are just all, you know, 18 to 22 year olds being friends, you know.
You brought up a point that I kind of want to expand on a little bit. I think that, you know, if you go into to an experience like leading a table discussion with too much of a notion of, oh, I'm the leader, then it could easily rub off on people the wrong way. So I think that having those types of experiences, but knowing how to balance, you know, being in charge, being in control versus simply achieving the objective of having a conversation are two totally different skills. And I think that, you know, here we see some people struggle with that quite a bit. But until you put yourself in that setting, you won't really know what that's like. So I've been grateful to have the experience, knowing the difference between, you know, getting up in front of a group, leading from the front, and kind of taking a step back and allowing my presence to facilitate something and get something done, but not necessarily, you know, who I am, my character being that.
Yeah, so when you are a facilitator, you're really trying to encourage others to have the conversation or to participate. Whereas when you're in CSAB and you're leading the group, you've got an agenda, you're following, you know, certain orders, and you've got to get that product done or finished. So what tactics would you say that you used between the two? Teach someone how to be a facilitator. What would you tell them?
I would say have a very open mind. When it comes to that open mind, you need to be able to have just enough structure so that the group isn't lost, but just little enough structure that the group isn't confined as well. To expand upon that, when you talk about just enough structure, you need to have enough key questions and key discussion points to go off of so that they still have a focus or a direction. However, that focus or direction could take a left or right at certain points in time, you still have a direction that you're going, nevertheless. When it comes to just little enough structure, you don't want to have too many questions and too many guiding points to be able to say, hey, this is our agenda, this is where we're going, this is what you should be answering the question with. Rather, we want the question to be answered with 50 answers rather than just, you know, one or two.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges that we have when we teach the facilitation instruction. We do two or three trainings leading up to that. Can you talk a little bit about that experience and what that was like?
I think it's pretty crucial to have at least a few dry runs and to kind of go through the environment that you're going to be in. You know, I was always raised with the saying, you have two ears and one mouth for a reason. And if I can kind of summarize what we do in those trainings, I would probably say that's what it is, honestly, because it's more of the practice of taking yourself away from the type of leadership you see a lot of in the Corps and making it more of that, you know, that facilitator role, the I'm going to be quiet, I'm going to let you talk, right? But we have to have a discussion. Like, we have things we have to get done, but I want to hear what you have to say. Your opinion is on the same playing field or more important than mine. You contribute to the discussion just as much or more than I do.
Would you say that you learn to use or frame open-ended questions?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that being able to understand where the conversation is going and frame those questions accordingly to keep the group thinking both on task as well as being creative about it. I think that was an art we learned in those training exercises that wasn't only applicable to the conferences themselves, but will be the same way down the road in life as well.
Has that training maybe helped you with conversations in the barracks or with maybe on the sports teams that you participated with?
Very much so. I know even in CSAB, we understood that there's a whole lot more people than just Ryan and I committing to the discussion, right? And just like the two ears, one mouth thing, it's a whole lot more productive to hear the folks who are actually going to be doing the legwork for our group, in any group in that matter, so that they can have the chance to do all the legwork, and then we're able to make a more informed decision at the end of that. I mean, frankly, that's just leadership in general. You want to ask for 2 cents for your entire team, because if you don't, then you're going to be missing a lot of pieces to the puzzle then.
Yeah, there's one other point to that, though. I found that when you have that open-ended, creative approach to conversations with your team as a leader, and I found this with NCAA, is that when people feel like they can trust you with their opinion, they're so much more willing to buy into what you have to sell, right? Like, you guys are going to be a much better team. You're going to work so much better together if you can honestly give people a chance to give their opinion and share what they have to say, and if you're receptive to it. That really pays off when it comes to working well as a team.
What would you say was the biggest lesson you learned leadership-wise from those experiences? How could you describe your strategy for building trust?
You know, I would say that the biggest lesson I've learned throughout this whole process and kind of taking a step back and evaluating who you are as a leader, whether it be in the LEAD 344 course, through the programs here at the CLE, et cetera, is the amount of value you have to put on the people who you serve in order to be effective. I think that Seth kind of hit on this when he talked about the CSAB group, but there were so many people in that group who were so much better connected to people at VMI than Seth and I were, who had, you know, considerably better skills in one area or another than Seth and I did. And even though we were the leaders of that group, right, like we had to place a lot of trust and we had to put a lot of value on those people. And I think it is a big transition going from being a high school kid who thinks you know everything and feels like you're owed something by everybody, right? Like, as a leader, like, wow, you know, I'm the leader, you owe me something since I'm in charge, right? It takes a lot to go from that to having that mindset of, wow, you know, I might be in charge, but you're here to help us, right? Like, I might be the one who makes the final say, I might be the one who's making the calls, but I'm looking to you just as much or more than you're looking to me. And I think that's a really important lesson that both of us have gained from this experience.
Yeah, definitely to add on to this is definitely a piece that I'm very well versed and feel quite passionate about, is the idea of servant leadership. I know even, you know, LEAD 344, we learn about all sorts of types of leadership. Servant leadership is the guaranteed one that you want to be as a leader, hands down. And it's not...
Can you describe that or define that for the audience?
Absolutely. So servant leadership is the idea of true leadership, in which you are there to serve your team and your team is there to make the team better. Your job is to do two things. One, shoulder the blame whenever there's anything bad that happens to the team, anything, any failures that happen. And your job is to pass the credit to the team whenever any success happens to the team. So obviously, we see that in many different facets at VMI, many different facets in the real world. That is one that I've definitely seen throughout either high school and coming up into VMI, and then definitely continuing past VMI. There was an interesting speech that was given by an Air Force four-star at the Air Force Academy, and he would just simply, throughout his entire speech, he would pull up various folks who were, you know, enlisted to lower ranking officers, and he would say, all right, these people did extraordinary things. They did X, Y, and Z. Your job is to be worthy to lead them rather than the other way around.
As a member of CSAB, you guys have a project each year. It may be one that continued from the previous year, or it might be something new on the table. What was your project, and then what that experience was like?
It's something that's not efficient at VMI that should be fixed, and that would definitely make the VMI experience better. So when it comes to this, we worked over the past 2 years to really refine down what's something that would make the VMI experience better. So obviously culture, communication, various things like that. We came to three big COAs by the end of last year that we briefed General Wins on.
And for the audience, what's a COA?
Absolutely. Course of action is sort of the shortened or the long version of what a COA is. And so a course of action that we came up with is, one, how does it deal with cadets to their RATs, as well as comm staff to cadets, as well as the Board of Visitors to the cadets as well. We found out that the Board of Visitors to cadets and the RATs to cadets kind of communication issue that was going on was already solved. But the comm staff communication to the cadets and cadet intercommunication was less efficient than it needed to be. And so we troubleshooted, hey, how are we going to solve this?
What kind of secondary unintended consequences were happening?
One of which is comm staff, the Corps, from the Corps' perspective, is comm staff isn't listening to us. And then from comm staff's perspective, the Corps isn't reading our emails, the Corps isn't getting our information, and or is just not caring about it. So there's
And how accurate would you say that is as a cadet?
It's quite accurate, because I've talked to several members of comm staff, and they're like, cadets don't read their emails. And then I would talk to the Corps, and they're like, comm staff doesn't understand where we're coming from. And there's this serious communication divide. So obviously, over the past year, we've troubleshooted that problem. We came up with this idea of an app, right? And I won't get into too much of the nitty-gritties of the app. Brandon Marks is a whole lot more prepared to give the nitty-gritties than I am. But the essential background is, it's one app that would conglomerate all of our information and all of our communication that's ever used at VMI and put it into just one single solitary app that both comm staff and the Corps can use. And there will be flat communication, being defined as communication that everybody's on the same page, everybody's on the same wavelength, and that's really where you need to be as an organization.
Now, I have to ask the obvious question. If cadets aren't reading emails, will they read content on an app? I guess that's a question.
Exactly. So we definitely troubleshooted that problem as well, and we kind of found out, this is the information generation, and one of those facets of the information generation is everything is on the cellular phone.
As you did your research, and again, don't need to get into the specifics as to which app it is or how it's going to function. I'm sure that will come later. What was that experience like? Did you have to meet with the comm staff to get their input or feedback, or did they have an opportunity to describe the kinds of communications they wished to parlay to the Corps? What kind of research did you have? Did you put together some focus groups, or how did that go?
We saw the Corps as our biggest asset, in the way that if we could get the Corps behind something that they could use and we could pitch it, then we'd have a much better success rate of getting the Commandant staff involved in that.
Buy-in.
Yeah, absolutely. Extremely important, especially with a group this big and this diverse. But we surveyed the Corps. We kind of sat down with separate groups of people and discussed, both within niche groups as well as on a broad scheme, you know, what would you like to see? What would make this more of a usable utilitarian feature, right? Like, what would make this a utilitarian tool? We came to find out that while this could originally be used as a communication tool, that there were so many other avenues that we could take on this as well and make it that much more of a useful thing that people would want to do. So what started as a communication solution kind of grew into something much bigger. And the more we dug, the more opportunities we found.
What was the temperature, if you will, of those whom you surveyed? Were they excited about this opportunity, or?
I would say for the most part, people were like, wow, that'd actually be a really awesome thing if we could make that happen. You know, we are very happy and fortunate to have this kind of on the forefront of people's minds right now. And we're lucky enough to probably have our pilot out for next year's group. So we're very excited.
Would you say that COVID or the COVID environment or that experience, because you guys were here when you matriculated, was COVID starting or kicking in? So you had a full year and a half. Regular year. And then your third class year was blown up.
Second semester of third class year is when things started to go a little haywire. Uh-huh.
And so would you say that now you've had experience before, during, and after COVID, what did the communications issues come to more of a forefront through that experience, or did it highlight it in any way, or did this just always exist?
Here's what I'll say, and then I'll let Seth say what he wants to, because I know he has a pretty strong opinion on this, is, you know, COVID exposed a lot of our weaknesses, but it also exposed a lot of opportunities.
Excellent.
Right? And I think that, you know, how we operated during COVID as a VMI community really showed us what we're capable of and how we can get better, even though it may have took some growing pains, if you want to call them that, to get us there. So when I look back on our experience and Seth...
Well, to be honest, any kind of culture change, any kind of, you know, adjustment is... it takes some time to transition.
Absolutely. And Seth said this was a two-year process, which it was. And kind of watching this develop over the last 2 years, it's kind of shown how we're stronger from the COVID experience, how there are these opportunities that we need to capitalize on if we want this to be a better experience for some people.
Yeah, very much so. So to kind of add on to what Ryan's saying is COVID definitely exposed those weaknesses in communication that we have and definitely exposed at least the idea of what's going on and how policy affects us and the communication of said policy trickling down through the chain of command. So that, you know, when it comes to that, that's really where this communication idea grew out of, and really think that sort of that passion fueled the fire to really get this communication app solution on underway.
Yeah, so in 2019, when we did our fall leadership conference, the title escapes me now because I'm just in a blur right now preparing for next year. At the conclusion of that event, the audience, cadets and everybody else who was there, they basically identified, we were talking about how we're all in digital technology era and 21st century. What was the most useful leadership tool that people needed to develop in the coming decades, basically, and communication was number one. So I'm not surprised that that was an area that you guys identified, that everybody's complaining about, because it's not only just about getting the right information to the right ears so that it's actionable, but it's also using the right terminology. I mean, I find a lot of people have conversations and you think you're talking about X and they think they're talking about X when really you're talking about two different things, and you just talk past each other, and it gets frustrating trying to get people on the same page.
You know, President and General Eisenhower said, you know, plans are nothing, but planning is everything. If you read into that, the idea of planning, the communication of communicating said plan is everything. That's kind of what he meant by that planning is everything rather than the plans are everything. So when it comes down to, you know, VMI as a whole, obviously we're a huge leadership lab, is being able to communicate any sort of plan, whether it's comm staff or the core or the board of visitors, is essential to making this place run so efficiently.
Each year, the center picks a leadership theme, and I've been asking all of our guests this year their thoughts on our theme this year, which was citizen leadership. Of course, we say that VMI, that we graduate citizen soldiers. Talk about that theme, and have you felt like that's been highlighted at all for you this year, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, not going to give a history lesson or anything here, but I mean, kind of going back to ancient Greece, there is this idea, and even ancient Rome as well, this idea of that you're responsible for your community, you're responsible for the, you know, demos back in the day.
Kind of speaks, I would think, to your idea of that servant leadership too.
Exactly.
The individual makes up those societies.
Exactly. And, you know, one man or one woman has the ability to impact their, not just their nation, but more so their community on a very more realistic perspective, in that it's not only their ability to do so, but their responsibility to do so and to affect their community. I think, you know, that goes back to the key of the Declaration of Independence as well, but we won't get into too much history here. But yeah, when it comes to citizen leadership, we see it a lot in the military, where it's the military is a very professional organization now, and it's like once you get out of the military, it's like, oh, your leadership journey's done. But it really isn't. It's really, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, make it a cliche, it's like it's just begun, but it's your responsibility to then go and take all of your experiences as you've done that, and, you know, let's say it's military or government organization, and bring it back into your civilian organizations and the places that you touch. Frankly, it's a lifelong journey, and it's really, for us, it's just the beginning of ours, and we're hoping to make a lasting impact.
Excellent.
I think the whole theme of citizen leadership obviously comes at a very convenient time, and, you know, VMI's done a very good job of cultivating the fact that, you know, breaking down what makes us different and building up what makes us so similar, right? Like, people come to VMI from all different backgrounds. They're broken down the same way. They put on the same uniform every day, and a lot of them have very similar goals, right? And I think as we move away from VMI into the real world as cadets, that it's important to realize that, you know, if you see every opportunity with somebody like that as you move forward, you know, if you look at how similar you are to that person as opposed to what all your differences are, it makes it so much easier to build relationships, right? And whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, black, white, male, female, religious, not religious, like, you have something to offer society, right? And being able to realize that someone who's different from you has those abilities and those contributions makes it so much easier for us to operate better in terms of our relationships with each other and society as a whole.
So honoring each other's humanity, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we all come from different experiences. We all want different things. That's the nature of who we are as people, right? But that doesn't make you any more or less of a person because you think differently than I do, if that makes sense.
Well, thank you very much. I think
absolutely.
That's a great place to stop it.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
Your time, Cadet Cooper, Cadet McRoberts. Thank you for being guests on the VMI Leader Journey podcast. We hope all of you listening will like and share this episode.
Thank you, Major Roy.
On behalf of the VMI Center for Leadership and Ethics, we thank the following: Mr. Caleb Minus, VMI Class of 2020, for the intro and backing music. Find more of his musical stylings on his Instagram page, at Minus Official. That's at MYNUS Official. Colonel Dave Gray, PhD, U.S. Army retired, director of the VMI Center for Leadership and Ethics. And of course, as always, our podcast guests. Find this podcast and other CLE programming information on the VMI Center for Leadership and Ethics website, vmi.edu/CLE. Follow the VMI Center for Leadership and Ethics on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn,
or Instagram accounts. The VMI Center for Leadership and Ethics educates, engages, and inspires the VMI Corps of Cadets, VMI staff, faculty, and alumni, and listeners like you. Thanks for tuning in.